Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Kernel of Truth. I'm your host, Brian O'Sullivan. We've got season two that's arrived. We're excited to be back here, back in action. Got some new topics, new guests. We're going to talk today about EVPN on the host. And I've got a couple folks here. Just briefly introduce myself. I'm Brian O'Sullivan. I have product management at Cumulus Networks. And I'll introduce the rest of the folks here as well.
I'm Attila de Groot. I'm an SE for EMEA. And I'll be joining for this talk.
Hi, I'm Atul. I'm from Cumulus Engineering. I work on routing protocols.
All right. Well, so one of the things, when we're talking EVPN the host, a lot of folks are starting to move to L3 data centers. They're adding more and more layer 3 in their data centers. We get a lot of requests and a lot of deployments with EVPN and VXLAN from a data center perspective. But in this case, we're talking something a little bit different, talking about EVPN actually running on the host itself. So I guess kind of the first question is from a problem statement perspective. I mean, what are the main things that that we're hearing from customers is the problems they're encountering that we're then recommending the or offering EVPN as a host as an option, let's say?
As an SE, I visit a lot of customers, conferences, etc. And when I'm talking to customers, they're always like, okay, we have this nice overlay network, and the default solution is EVPN, and we don't have to go into details because I think there have been enough podcasts and presentations on that. But it's more like, okay, now I have my hosts, and they have had the same configuration for the past 20 years. You have a host, it has two links, and typically you do MLAC.
Right. It's L2 just up into the data center itself.
And the question is more, what can you do more, and how can I integrate that into a total solution? Right. Because there are some issues if you just have that default setup. And, I like protocols. And just because you can is not a valid argument, although I like it. I was looking like, okay, how can we use EVPN, the protocol that I like, to solve more problems? And one of them is MLAC, for example. If you look at those hosts, I think that Cumulus and other vendors have been working very hard to make that a stable solution, but it's not a standard.
Right. There isn't just an MLAG RFC necessarily.
No,
right.
Every vendor has its own implementation. It doesn't interoperate. And I was like, okay, what can we do to solve that? Now we have solutions where you route to a host. So we have free range routing on hosts, and you can set up your BGP sessions. But what you basically do is you announce an IP address, and you can serve whatever service you have. Now, the problem there is that you need to do multi-tenancy, right? So you have multiple VMs or multiple containers, and how can you split them from each other?
Well, and just so quickly on that, I mean, to be clear, layer 3 in the host does work. I mean, it's a thing you can certainly peer directly from your servers up into your data center. It's just that you are peering and you're not getting the additional benefit of multi-tenancy for it, right?
Exactly. So you need some kind of overlay network on the hosts itself.
Right.
And there are now commercial solutions that solve it, or in OpenStack, or in a container environment that's all solved. But then again, you're not using something that is a standard. And then you get into the interoperational issues.
And if you want to change, let's say for the sake of argument, you're changing your software architecture, your host-based software architecture from a VM-based architecture to a container-based architecture, which we're seeing more and more with folks kind of making that migration. If they have settled on a VM-specific solution in this example, it can't be the same, you know, to your point, because it is not a standardized thing. Whereas if you then say, okay, to get that multi-tenancy, we'll do the EVPN networking solution down, that they're able to architect their software however they would like.
Exactly. If you have a container host with containers and you want them to belong to the same tenant as your VMs, or you have a very old mainframe system that belongs to that same tenant, you can interrupt everything with that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so from as we're doing with that and building out that kind of multi-tenancy, what are kind of the things we're concerned with when building it out and deploying it? I don't know if Atul, you want to
Yeah, with what's mostly deployed these days is MLAG, and I know I'm on a different point. You very limited to two switch upstream switches to connect to the server, and that's very limiting as far as redundancy is concerned. And with L3 on the host, you just don't have any such limit, and only limiting factor is your physical connectivity to upstream switches.
Right.
You can ECMP over 4 or 8 switches and efficiently use all those and get very high redundancy. So going back to multi-tenancy, kernel supports WRF implementation, and you could run multiple WRFs. Each tenant WRF could run containers, and there's no integration with current orchestration like Kubernetes, but that should be doable.
Yeah, I mean, so from a kernel perspective, there's the as you mentioned, the Linux kernel itself is VRF. I think we'd say that's 4.14, I think we were saying. Is it 4.18 or 4.14?
Officially 4.10, but afterwards there were some new patches and additions. So I have a demo working. Atul has been testing. And what kernel version did you use?
4.18 or 4.19.
Yeah. Right, the newer Buster-based.
Same for me.
Buster. Okay. So, I mean, there is some kind of requirements that we'll need to make sure that from a host perspective, that Linux, and I'm saying Buster just from a Debian base thing, but it doesn't have to be Debian. It certainly can be RHEL or CentOS or Ubuntu or whatever.
Yeah. As soon as you can install that newer kernel, there are a few tools in addition that you would need. Some of them Cumulus developed over the years, but then you can create a complete solution with that.
Right.
But to what Atul said, that's all done manually and right now in proof of concept environments. So something like an OpenStack or a Kubernetes doesn't know about this yet.
Right. Just because they're from those solutions perspective, they're not kind of talking down and not really expecting that sort of EVPN. So there's currently work that's done to manually set that up to your point.
Yeah.
Now from that orchestration, I mean, is that something that folks, you know, I know you'd written this blog on this, that's on the website. Is that something that folks are also interested in doing, is setting up that level of orchestration as well, above and beyond the kind of standard EVPN multi-tenancy?
So I'll be giving a talk, hopefully, if it's accepted, at OpenStack Denver. And I'll be working together with someone who wants to implement a new driver, and we'll do that together, so that it would integrate with OpenStack. Mm. So OpenStack does have the concept of multi-tenancy, but there needs to be a way for that module or the driver to configure bridges and VLANs and VRFs and everything on the correct place on that host for it to work. So that will be a concern. That's not done yet. Same thing for Kubernetes. It doesn't have a concept for VRF. Atul, I'm not sure if you know that perhaps, but I'm not sure if you can have overlapping IP addresses in a Kubernetes these days.
No, I'm not too sure about that. Each pod having, I think it has to have unique IP addresses.
I mean, and to be clear, when we're saying Kubernetes, just kind of picking that as a container orchestration, it is not orchestration specific. It could say Docker Swarm, or could say...
Yeah, you can use any as long as it knows what to do. But yeah, Kubernetes these days is one of the most popular ones.
That's true, that's true. But yeah, I mean, certainly the idea is that if you, you know, and again, this is a bit future facing. I mean, there's not a lot of customers who are, as of this time, doing EVPN at the host. But as this, I think, is an area where folks can look for more development to be made in upcoming component releases as Kubernetes enhances, as Docker Swarm enhances, as OpenStack, to your point, enhances to get that additional level of orchestration. But it should work. It'll still work.
Yeah.
Now, of course, right, with manual.
Right. One possibility is you can run Kubernetes within a WRF.
Yeah. So if you look currently at containers, what you have is you have one physical host, and all the containers running on that are pretty much dedicated to a single tenant. You can split them, but then you have to work with ACLs and firewalls. But as soon as you introduce VRFs, then you can basically split up a physical host over multiple tenants without any difficult security boundaries. And the overlapping IP addresses that I said, because although we teach everyone not to care about an IP address, everyone likes 10/8 for their IP addresses.
Right. So from a from an L3, I know we want to cover both from an L2 and an L3 perspective. Do you want to talk kind of the differences that would be expected there from, again, on the host?
So perhaps we can explain a bit like, okay, what you will be building from or how it looks like. Basically, you are moving the complexity towards the host itself. So your switches will be doing BGP with the EVPN address family. And your host will run the VLANs that you would normally run on switches. So the host becomes a VTAP in VXLAN terms. Now, VMs and containers, they have different requirements. But for a VM, one thing that you need is your hosts need to be in the same layer 2 domain, or at least the VMs, so that you can move them from one hypervisor to the other. With VXLAN and then with EVPN, you configure a VXLAN tunnel from one hypervisor to the other, and that means that they can have VMs in the same broadcast domain. And you would normally do that with OpenStack's own environment, or if you use plain KVM, you can use static tunnels, etc. But that is how it looks now, and that is something you can replace with EVPN on hosts.
And now, I mean, I think one of the things, too, from that perspective, to your earlier point, because the EVPN is on the host, the switching itself, by switching, I don't mean L2 switching, but I mean the switches, I guess I should say, the network itself, is just pure, it's pure BGP, it's pure L3. There's nothing else to be worried about because, again, that those endpoints have now been kind of driven down to the hosts themselves. And so, therefore, the TORs don't need to worry about it anymore, right?
Yeah, and if you look at it from data center design perspective, one thing we're trying to do is we are trying to make it more simpler, right, and more manageable. And in this case, if you look at the configuration that you have for, say, a spine switch right now, that's very simple. And you will basically be creating the same configuration on a leaf switch. So everything becomes less independent. You don't have MLAG anymore, like we said. So it becomes much more easier to manage.
And to troubleshoot and to configure. Right, exactly. Yeah.
And one of those things is also the redundancy. So where you first were depending on the two top of rack switches, now every host becomes independent of other nodes in a data center.
And one more thing, even need for EVPN on the fabric can be limited to only a couple of spine switches, and every host just peers to that as a router factor, or
so potentially not even using the leaves at all.
Potentially, all other leaves can be switches with no support for EVPN, just the IP and forwarding, and only a couple of spines which peer to all the hosts can have EVPN address family support. No need to forward. No need to have VXLAN VTAPs.
Yeah, there are different design perspectives on that. That is something we have to figure out. So if you're talking about, okay, how are we going to deploy this and what kind of problems would you see, that would be definitely one. There's no blueprint yet on how you would design such a thing. Because of the example that you give, or just gave, I'm like, okay, I'm not sure if I would implement it that way. But on the other hand, I didn't give it a lot of thought. So.
Right. But at least it opens up, to your point, different avenues and new potential designs. And I think part of the thing, you know, we hear quite a bit is that, you know, as these kind of new architectures come out, there's always the question of simplicity of configuration and the fewer features, the less configuration you have running on a particular box does often help you, either because there could be misconfigured things from the start. Some, you know, if you've got 50 things to enter in, it's harder than if you have six, number one. Or number two, it's easier from a troubleshooting perspective to know if there are issues that have gone wrong, it would seem.
Yeah, layer 3 troubleshooting is always easier than layer 2 troubleshooting.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And one more key advantage. Today, when we go try to deploy a pod, users normally want single vendor devices on the pod for the fear of interoperability. Once we simplify the protocols running in the pod, you potentially can have multi-vendor switches mixed together.
Well, that's true. I mean, as talked about earlier, because the, you know, MLAG, for example, is not standardized, and often you must have a single vendor. That's a good point. Once you do open that up, you can then say, well, it doesn't matter, you know, what is there, because again, it's just L3, right? So it doesn't necessarily matter what vendors are running in.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we do have the container implementation as well. But I think it would be also good to look at layer 3 overlays,
right?
To talk about it. Because if you look at the VMs, what we just said, you have a layer 2 domain between the hypervisors.
That's right.
One question in EVPN design is always, where do I put my gateway? I think that one of my colleagues, he wrote 3 blog posts on them. I have to...
all about gateways?
All about gateways. So where do you position them in your network, and what are the advantages and disadvantages? Now, one of the problems, if you look at other solutions, is the fact that you have VMs on multiple hypervisors, and what you then do is you have a dedicated network node. Mm. So all your VMs talk to that network node, and then it somehow goes to the rest of the world. That means that if VM1 needs to talk to VM2, which is in a different hypervisor, it first needs to go to the exit node and then back again.
Right.
Now, one of the advantages with EVPN is that we have a concept that is called an anycast gateway, or a distributed gateway. And that means that you can use the same gateway address on every host that you have, and that results in that it doesn't have to go back and forward to an exit node.
Well, I think it's a couple things, right? That's certainly one of them, right? It doesn't have to go back to the exit node. The other one is, again, the simplicity of configuration. If it's literally the same gateway address, then you'll know if it's wrong on one of the boxes, right?
Yeah.
You put the exact same snippet of configuration on every single one of them, and if you automate that, it should be fairly simple to do so. Yeah.
Well, one more point to add to that is you could do routing on the VTAP itself, which is your host. So you don't really have to exit the host for a lot of routing needs.
Yeah, so typically you have a tenant, and they can have multiple subnets. But in the scenario that I explained earlier, if there are two VMs on the same hypervisor in a different subnet, they would first have to go through that exit node and then back again. While if you are doing local routing, it basically is routed on the hypervisor, so it doesn't even go up to the Tor switch or anything else. So also your latency reduces a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, so we've talked about some of the VMs and containers. And to be clear, the L3 aspect of it could still work with either of these as well, right?
Correct.
Other things we want to kind of cover or talk about from a ACL perspective, or from other potential features that could be coming?
So for me, if you look at what I explained earlier, you want to divide tenants. But inside a tenant, there might be reasons to block traffic from one project or maybe a different department to another. And typically you would use ACLs for that because there's no way to block it because it's all in the same VRF.
Right.
Now that's a problem for containers because there you might actually have the same tenants and you have to split everything with ACLs, which is a lot of administration work. But ACLs can also be deployed on each hypervisor. So the filtering will be done locally, and it's only significant to that tenant. So you can have the overlapping IP addresses, I think that's much more scalable.
And in this case, just from an ACL, we're talking really just IP tables, EB tables, kind of standard Linux solution.
Yeah, exactly. And there's work done on that aspect as well in the Linux kernel, which is the BPF. That allows for much faster and scalable filtering than you would used to have. But the explanation of that, we'll have to leave that for another time.
That's right.
But one thing that I've also been looking at, Free Range Routing has an implementation for BGP Flow Spec. And if the people listening don't know what it is, it's basically using BGP to distribute ACLs in your network. So where you first would need an automation tool like an Ansible to distribute your ACLs and make sure that they are all significant to that tenant, etc. In this case, you have one controller or multiple that are basically injecting those ACLs, and they are only installed in the correct hypervisors. Now, while I'm saying that Free Range Routing does have that implementation, it is not 100% complete yet. I found it out last week, but it is something that we're looking at and that we want to, implement further.
Well, I mean, I think certainly, and this, you know, probably came across loud and clear to folks. I mean, this is, you can absolutely do EVPN on the host. That's a thing that works. That being said, there's a lot of development in the area, whether it is on the, you know, orchestration side, whether it is on the BPF side, et cetera, on BGP flow spec that are still kind of coming and under development. So it's active. It's not something that has been baked for a long time, but even still is something that is newer. It does create a lot of advantages, whether it's again, from a deployment perspective, from a simplification perspective, from a management perspective as well.
Definitely.
One more thing we missed this time is about op separation. That is somewhat incomplete at this point because there's no kernel supports the separation, but there's no component that learns the addresses from the ARP, and that is lacking. It's not very big work. Either FRR can add it or some user space daemon can add a snooper.
Right. So right now, in other words, there is no ARP suppression as part of FRR or typically part of routing daemons. And that's what we're talking about when we're saying routing on the host itself, because it's really just the daemon running there. I guess the questions, you know, one of the questions first comes up is for the host base, do we need ARP suppression? Is it a bad thing to suppress? Do we want to have those? Perhaps if there are VMs popping into existence or containers popping into existence, it may be beneficial to even have that ARPing, just so there's some...
Have you tested what happens... Well, we don't have that feature right now. So what is the effect?
ARPs are flooded right now.
Okay, so they are not learned by...
They're not learned.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but you can manually program a neighbor entry. So potentially customer can have a... Or user can have a controller or script that just snoops ARPs and keeps programming the neighbor entry. Once you have neighbor entry, then there is no more flooding.
Well, I think it all comes back to what we've been doing for a lot of times is that, or a long time, is that if you are deploying a large layer 2 network, or at least you want to reduce the size of a layer 2 network, and that is something that people need to get used to, because right now they're thinking, oh, I have my IP fabric and EVPN, now I can scale endlessly, but that doesn't mean it's a good thing to do. So right. Even when you have ARP suppression, there is some flooding in some use cases. So it would always be a good idea to keep your layer 2 domain small.
All right. Well, on that note, I think that's the last bit of wisdom I think we get in this kind of...
Perfect.
Timing, exactly. Keep your L2 small. But I want to thank everyone for listening to The Kernel of Truth. We'll post some show notes on the Cumulus blog, and you can find educational material there as well as on both Cumulus as well as the opening networking industry as a whole itself. And of course, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. We're coming back quite soon with new guests and new topics and more talk about open networking. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.